But is not this a higher teaching, that our only object can be the will of the Father? This me has no object. Why? There is no me. There is only the Son of God. The Son of God is the Spirit and the life of God. It must do the will of the Father. And therefore, if you have an object in life, you have a will to pursue that object, and you are no longer the Son of God who fulfills the will of the Father. You are pursuing the will of a me, and there is no me who is the Son of God. So this is how humanity walks out into duality, right out of the Garden of Eden. Each me having its object, its purposes, its way, its means. And of course, it would seem to be impractical to have no object in life. But it turns out that everything else is impractical, because all of our objects in life, stemming from a me who is not the Son of God, builds nothing but clay houses that disintegrate in time. And so we reach out for a handful of what seems to be solid matter, and all it is empty electricity. And eventually it just disappears. And there goes what we thought was our lifespan. Our bodies, our homes, our friendships, all of our relationships disintegrate. Why? Because I had an object. There was a me. And that me is the first lie. That's the me who's being reborn of the Spirit, learning there never was a me. There's only I, the invisible child of God, right here, right now. I am at hand. The invisible child of God that I am is not to be attained tomorrow, but is now and here. As I sever the cord between myself and the world mind. Now I have seen, as you do that, that certain things are lifted. It almost becomes childlike in its simplicity. You can see in a moment how all of the evils of the world come into visible manifestation. And suddenly, the impression that mortal mind or carnal mind is just a word in the Bible, you're really looking every day at a cosmic broadcast, and it isn't a game anymore. Evil is broadcast, disease is broadcast, and your five senses are the antennas. And if your antenna is out there, you're going to pull in what world mind is broadcasting. You're really the expression of a cosmic broadcast as a me. The creature is a cosmic broadcast made visible. And now we're at a high level where we're facing truth, even though it might at another level be shocking, or even something we wouldn't consider. Unless we are connected to the living word, we are an expression of the cosmic mind which is broadcasting the belief in good and evil. The day is going to come in your life when every day, you will spend some time separating yourself from mortal mind. It'll become so joyous to you to do it when you see the results that it'll be the first thing you think of. This very instant, before I do another thing, I'm going to separate myself from the universal mind of the world, with all its superstitions, its fears, its hatreds, its material beliefs. And I'm going to do that by releasing my five senses from that world mind, until I can walk through this world in a state of detachment, without those five antennae pulling in every belief of the world and me manifesting it as a pain in my back or my arm or my pocketbook. If they have an earthquake, it'll be something my antenna won't pick up the same way. If they put the flu into circulation through world belief, it'll be something my antenna will reject. Why? Because once it creeps up from the unconscious and manifests itself, you will quickly sever your consciousness from the world. And then you will say, not only will I do this now, but I'll make it a point to do it every day. I won't wait for the world consciousness to infiltrate mine and then to pop up in my life as a world problem made visible. I'll spend my day releasing myself to God, giving the world back to Christ. I have no object in life, says Joel. I am life, already fulfilled, already complete, already free, already divine. And this that is out here in time is simply living visibly the life that I am, resting in life. The power of life will manifest, and before you ask, every need is fulfilled. The moment he said, I have no object in life, he was accepting his own divinity and the omnipresence and omnipotence of that divinity. He was accepting the ever-presence of grace to fulfill him with 12 baskets full at all times. This was the cosmic unselfing. I have no object in life. It only sounds difficult, but that's exactly what you're doing. You're removing your purposes and desires one by one until you are revealed as life itself. Then Christ liveth your life. This should be a goal you keep uppermost. Wherever you see a desire or a purpose or a plan popping up, get back inside and confirm from the living word if this is the living plan. If it is, fine. If it isn't, you better be attentive to what is the divine plan, because that will be the enduring one. Obedience to the living word is part of spiritual progress. goal of the mystical life, Joel says on page 92, is to be a beholder of God in action, in which nothing is ascribed to one's self, not even good motives. As for desires or desire, there is none. There are not even needs, because every need seems to be met before one becomes aware of it as a need. This is living by grace. Now, if you're feeling a degree of that, you can give yourself an A for spiritual progress. If you feel somehow that grace is functioning in your life, that less of your planning is necessary, and less fearing about results, if you're more and more certain of the invisible Christ everywhere, you can see that you have absorbed the knowledge that the presence is where you stand. You've got your foot in heaven. Now, here it is again, and it's very difficult for those who have never heard it before. But it is truth, and it is spoken by authority. There is not God and you. There is not God and you. There is only God. That means wherever you are, only God is there. Not you. Only God. Wherever anyone is, there is not that anyone, only God. That would appear to mean your work is cut out for you, because you will reach that realization that only God is there and only God is here. There's not two forms. There's one invisible God. And if that is your consciousness, that will manifest in the outer as the harmony. You see, it isn't who studies longer, who burns the midnight oil. It's who will live with the truth. It's who has been touched deeply enough to feel the truth. That one automatically finds themselves in a circumstance where they are going to either demonstrate or not demonstrate that truth. And if the circumstance is met with truth in consciousness, it is demonstrated. And if it is not met with truth in consciousness, the circumstance was necessary to reveal to that individual that he or she was not yet in truth. If it is met with truth, it was necessary to lift them to a confirmation of what they were struggling to attain in consciousness. And having attained that confirmation, there will be more similar events. The flood and the fire will be further away, but that will come when the individual has built sufficient confidence through these continuing events to express truth, to hold truth, regardless of what might appear. If you're able to do that, you've been touched. God gave himself to this world as you, the begotten Son. He did not breathe into your life. He breathed into you his life. Again, the five-sense mind is what intervenes between the life of God where you are and makes you feel that you are in a human life. The five-sense mind is the divider. Dominion over it by truth in consciousness invites the spirit. And that separation through the five senses is eliminated. His presence is the secret meat of which the Master spoke. It is also your secret meat. His presence is your secret meat. Where is his presence? You are his presence. You are his presence. Your knowledge that you are his presence is your secret me. Your inability to rest in that knowledge is your denial of it. Your studies should be concentrated upon that faculty which can accept you are the invisible presence and not the visible flesh. Thou seest this visible flesh, thou seest the invisible presence of the Father. This is a fact that you cannot change. You can be unaware of it. You can be unable to maintain the consciousness of it, but you cannot change the truth of it. You are the invisible presence of God. There is no one on the earth who is not that invisible presence. Now, we can go back for a moment to the nobleman's son. After the father had checked about when the son was alive and found it was the very moment that Jesus spoke, so the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus said unto him, "Thy son liveth." Do you know when that hour was? That hour was, in this Bible here, yesterday at the seventh hour. 6 days of creation and the seventh day of rest. 6 stone water pots before the water changes to wine. The healing of the nobleman's son in the seventh hour. What is that seventh hour? The moment when you have accepted the invisible presence of God where you stand. Where your neighbor stands. That is the seventh hour. And in that moment, you're in the consciousness of truth. If you understand the experience of transition, he's making the point now between transition and death. If you understand the experience of transition, knowing that death isn't death but is transition, and have really, honestly, lost your fear of death, you are wholly on the spiritual path. And you will have arrived at least to the entrance of heaven, but You cannot reach this stage until you have realized that God is your selfhood. That God is your selfhood. Those are pretty difficult words all the way through here. Let's, for a moment, assume that the day is coming when we all know this to be so without any effort. God is my selfhood. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. I see you, I see the Father. I see a bad boy, I see the Father. I see a good boy, I see the Father. I see a thief, I see the Father. Who is there? The Father. Where is the thief? There is none. Where is the bad boy? There is none. Where is the good boy? There is none. These are cosmic mind ideas trying to translate into visibility the perfection of the Father. Everywhere is the invisible Father. That being your consciousness will be your seventh day. The birth of Christ in you. Now, you've never thought of yourself as the invisible Father. Or if you have, it has been a fleeting, once in a wild thing. Let us take that into our consciousness this week. The invisible Father I am. And as you go through your week, compare your outer activities with the truth that you are the invisible Father and see the wide discrepancy between what you do and what the truth of you is. Make some kind of adjustment to the truth. And it will not be too long before you see that living the truth is easier than living the untruth. Living the untruth is the natural way, and living the truth seems difficult. But as you are able to live the truth, it becomes more difficult to live the untruth. And you find your change of consciousness is well underway. I'm going to repeat one exercise today, and that is the exercise of breaking the cord of world thought. Let's do it a different way. You're tuning into a television program and you don't want to see it. You don't like it. You just turn the dial. Then you turn the dial to another program and it's completely different. Now, I learned from Christ that the one program that is here is my kingdom. It's at hand. It's being broadcast. Perfection is being broadcast throughout the spiritual universe. That's the program I want to see. That's the place where I want to live. But somehow my faculties are tuned into this program called the world. And in it I find a lot of things that I had once assumed were happening, which the Christ tells me aren't real at all. They're just appearances, and I must judge not after these appearances. there's evil in this world, and my father didn't make that evil. In fact, this world is not my father's kingdom. I want to live in my father's kingdom, but I'm tuned into the world. Suppose I tune out of the world. Where will I be? I will find that I am in my father's kingdom the moment I tune out of the world. And it may be one little sense that is holding me in this world. And I'm staying with a sense of touch, because even when you're blind and deaf, that sense of touch is still there. And it holds you in this world. If I'm absent from this body, I have no sense of touch. And if I'm absent from the belief that I'm in this body, I have no sense of touch. If you are in the belief that you're in God, and you're also in the belief that whatever is not in God has no relationship to you, you're walking through God. You have no human sense of anything. You are divine consciousness. Now let your thought diminish into total stillness, a stillness so complete that you truly are merely divine consciousness without human thought. No thought. No mental idea about form. No mind. One perfect divine mind. The only mind there is the mind of the Father where you are. Now, any thought that anyone should throw at you simply hits nothingness. You don't consider it. You don't dwell upon it. You don't analyze it. It just comes to a mind that isn't there. You don't for one second linger with the idea presented to you. Just let it go. Stay in your no thought. All of this is the way you say, "Speak, Lord, thy servant heareth." That's what you're saying right now. Simply by no thought. You're saying, "Speak, Lord, I've built the house for you to enter." You have accepted all that God is. You are ready for the everlasting arms to make themselves known. I know we're supposed to attain this only in meditation, but you will find you can maintain this walking the streets, going through your house chores, going to business. I don't care what you're doing, you can have this open consciousness behind you. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. And you will discover that when world thought knocks at your door, there's nobody home. It won't be a necessity for you to meet things as they come. They simply will pass by. To the degree that you are able to maintain this consciousness. World thought cannot enter the mind that is surrendered to the mind of God. And if it takes you 5 or 10 minutes a day to learn how to do it, you'll find it saves the other 23 in hours and 50 minutes from world thought messing up your days with problems that you don't need. Oneness, says Joel, is the Master's teaching. There is no two-ness. And that oneness, you might add, is already the established fact in your acceptance of the invisible self as yourself. You are that living oneness. Oh yes, we should say this, I think. You're trying to feel it, of course. You want to feel that oneness. But you can't feel it with your ears or your eyes or your hands. And I think in this chapter Joel mentions you can't feel spiritual, and so it makes you think you're not progressing. But don't worry about feeling spiritual. Nobody can feel spiritual. Spirit doesn't feel spiritual, it simply is spirit. You may not feel this oneness, but all you can do is reach the place where you are a vacuum, and the oneness will come through by itself. Don't let the human try to make oneness. Oneness, or the presence of spirit, will announce itself. Now, some of you may want to make some plans for the future. I'd like to announce that in February we'll probably take a vacation. Let's say that we should finish this book in January, Beyond Words and Thoughts. We might finish it the very last day in January. And then we'll take February and sort of recoup. Come back in March with the realization of oneness, but always continuing with John. So if some of you have been planning a trip, February is a fine time. That'll also get us started just before Easter again. So we will have taken this little period for regeneration. A reactivization is sort of a regrouping, chance to get together with that inner self and be refreshed. So I'd say we have roughly about 6 to 8 classes more in this book before the vacation. Now, world work is going to be important in the next chapter. And it is another manifestation of progress. When you are spiritually motivated, there's less of how can I improve me and more of how can I serve the Spirit. There's more of the unselfing, more of the awareness of world work. More of granting freedom to others, more compassion, more understanding of the reality of everyone. You'll find that your whole attitude is not me, but the world, as you are illumined more and more. And you can tell by your attitude now just where you stand. Because ultimately you're going to get out of trying to improve me. That would just be a routine thing that happens automatically. But it will be a pouring forth into the world of the light of your being. You'll see how this exercise of cutting yourself off from the world mind prepares you for the world work, for then you have light to shine. We'll do that chapter next week, and we'll go into John 5. Thanks for being with us today. For those of you who won't be here before Christmas, wish you the best. For those of you who will, we won't have the Christmas party this year. We had it last year during vacation, and the vacation this year will come in February. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.